What more do you want from me?
I don't want peace. I want problems, always.
The hunt is on, and you're the prey.
So let me get this straight. You decided to approve your girl going to a B&B party with her best friend that you know is for the streets. And the reason that you approve this outing is because you don't want to seem like you're insecure and you're in love with your girl and you want to give her the world and more if possible. Your girl goes to the B&B party and she disappears for hours. So much so that you pick up the phone and call multiple times, but to no avail, there is no answer. After many failed attempts of trying to get in contact with your girl, she finally calls back. And as soon as you pick up the phone, you hear a deep voice on the other end that says, "Hey, bro, she busy right now. Stop calling." Not only do you hear that, you also hear a lot of laughter in the background. You're trying to figure out, how do they have your girl's phone and where is she? But before you could even ask the question, they hang up right in your face. And you call back, no answer. You call back again, no answer. You FaceTime and they eventually pick up. They pick up the phone, you can hear a lot of laughter, but the room is dark and you're trying to figure out, where is your girl? For the sake of this story, we're going to call her Lisa. So immediately you say, "Hey, Lisa, come to the phone. Why these niggas playing? Who are these niggas?" And you hear another female voice that tries to pretend to be Lisa, but you know that's not Lisa. Come to find out, that's her homegirl that's for the streets that brought her to that party in the first place. So you say, "Hey, yo, I got your location. I'm finna pull up." The niggas in the background say, "Hey, nigga, you pull up. We gonna Swiss cheese you. This is a B&B party with a lot of niggas that got kablamos. I don't think this is a place you want to be." In that moment, you are struck by fear, but you also still don't know where Lisa is. So you plead with the young men on the other end of the phone saying, "Hey, bro, just put Lisa on the phone. I just want to talk to her." And they tell you again, "Nah, bro, she busy." They hang up on you. You don't hear from Lisa until the next morning. 8 o'clock sharp, your phone starts ringing and you know immediately it has to be Lisa. And lo and behold, it is. Lisa gets on the phone and goes immediately into explanation mode. She slept at her best friend's house. She don't know what happened. She don't know who those guys were. She weren't dealing with any of them. And you believe her. You tell her, "Come to your house so we can talk about it because this can't continue to happen." She says, "No problem. I'll be there in no time." I guess Lisa didn't take a good look at herself in the mirror because she got hickeys all over her neck, but she walks right into your front door. And before she could say anything, you automatically knew she lied to you. But you are so in love that despite physical evidence, you ignore it, listen to Lisa's side of the story, and you side with her. She tells you those hickeys came from her playing drinking games with other women, and that was just a dare. Y'all hash it out, y'all have the conversation, y'all come to a conclusion, and she's like, "You know what, this will never happen again." And you believe her because you are in love. Fast forward a couple months, you're at your warehouse job. There's a group of niggas standing in a circle looking at a video from Twitter. You walk over, you peek over somebody's shoulder, and lo and behold, this is Lisa giving head to two niggas at the B&B party. One nigga's recording, the other nigga's on the phone with another nigga. And that other nigga on the other line of that phone call is you. In complete and total shame, you walk away from the group. You tell your manager you got a family emergency and you got to leave work early. Your manager honors it and you go home. You get home and you don't know what to do because you know deep down the anger that you feel. You might possibly hurt Lisa if she comes around you. So you call her and you say, "Hey, that B&B party, I want you to tell me the truth. What really happened that day?" For whatever reason, Lisa fesses up. She says, "You know what? This is what happened. This is what happened. This is what happened." And you say, "Is that all?" She says, "Yes." And once more, you hash it out. You believe Lisa. You go on about your business. Your relationship continues. But the paranoia that you feel from seeing your girl on a video will never leave your brain. That image is going to haunt you for the days to come. So much so that one night you and Lisa are in bed. You take it upon yourself to go through Lisa's phone. You go through her phone, you find out that she's been talking to somebody from that B&B party because their message thread started the day of the party, and they've been fucking since that day. And bro only hit her up late at night, which ultimately means Lisa's for the streets. Lisa's a breezy, and she's been lying to you. You wake Lisa up, you tell her, get out your crib, she's a fucking liar. Lisa cries, begs, and pleads that it's not what you think it is. And when it was all said and done, Lisa burns you with chlamydia. And much to my surprise, you would think that's the end of that story. Fast forward a couple years, present time, and you and Lisa are married with two kids. You know, I wish a love like that never finds me, because I don't think I could deal with anything like that. But fortunately for y'all, you ain't got to listen to shit that I'm saying, because I'm just a normal guy. Yeah, I could be changed.
Yeah, that's one hell of a way to start it off, right? No, nobody wants to be the man that's getting down with Lisa. My God. May no love like that ever find me in a cuckold position like that. Never, ever. Well, family, welcome to another edition of Office Hours with Professor Carl Tone Jones. I am Professor Carl Tone Jones, and you're listening live from the 215 Philly Fridays. This is a little loud, good Lord. Hold on. I get it. All right, there we go. You're listening to Live from the 215 as we do Philly Fridays here on Fed Life Station at fedlifestation.com. You can also catch us on any podcast network, basically. All you have to do is punch in the True Stories Podcast Network, the True Stories Podcast Network, and you will be able to pull up. And like I say before, y'all, we're locking the door, but we're doing more than that. You just can't leave. All right. So on this edition, man, we're going to talk about a few things. First of all, that story was crazy. And sometimes, you know, you people have story time or whatever. So I'm hoping that that's a fictional story. But the fact of the matter is, we know guys like that. And those guys sort of make it hard for guys like us, right? You know, solid brothers who hold themselves, that are dignified, you know, operate with some integrity, self-respect. Because, you know, guys like that, I mean, shit, you know, when you're getting played like that out and somebody's playing in your face like that, you know that guy's batting out of his league. He's dealing with a woman that he feels as though he'll never be able to get something like that again. Unfortunately, he might be right, but I mean, damn, the level of disrespect, the layer of disrespect, and we probably know that that didn't stop there. You know what I'm saying? That situation didn't stop there. See, we got to get more like this, you know? And shout out to these brothers, you know, you know, the brother Carlos, and also, you know, the brother Mike.
A lot of dudes.
I want y'all to check them out. I want y'all to check out what they have to say, because, you know, it's in exact opposition of what you just heard. So check this out.
A lot of dudes out here dating women that don't like them. If she already like you, it don't matter where you go. We like to get what we think we don't supposed to have. I know. I'm trying to holler at who like me.
Right.
I ain't doing no impressing. I'm not impressing. You just gotta already like me.
Cause I like who like me.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't like me, fuck you. I ain't gonna like you and you don't like me, so. I tell you, the worst feeling in the world, man, is to have love for somebody that don't have love for you.
Mm.
That could be the worst. Oh, God, that shit hurt, man.
Yeah.
It make you like, damn.
You know how you chase a girl, she don't give you the time of day?
Right.
Men don't understand the universe don't want y'all to be together.
Right.
For that moment.
Yep. No.
The universe don't want you to be together.
But we start chasing. because we can't take rejection. But the universe is saying to you, motherfucker, I'm trying to explain to you, this ain't the one.
So fellas, I'm just gonna give you some advice. All that chasing, that shit don't work.
No,
if she wanna be, look, if she wants to be with you, she'll be with you. Believe me. All that chasing shit, you're killing yourself, B. I promise you.
And these brothers are right. All that chasing, you're chasing yourselves, you're chasing your own tails. And sorry about that, y'all. I've been I've been talking a lot today and dealing with a lot. So, you know, my voice is a little off. You got to excuse me today. But, you know, those brothers are right. And I've never been in a situation where I was going to stick around with a woman that didn't want to be with me. Like, first of all, the chasing thing. No, sir. No, sir. It's more so about self-respect. And I think a lot of brothers are dealing with, you know, situations and circumstances that, you know, well, I'll tell you what, there's some people that can explain it better than me. So listen to Sister and Elder Shahrazad Ali.
I have a man who everybody hates. We hate him. His mama hated him. His family hated him. The white police hated him. The regular white men and white women hated him. This is a man who is hated by everyone. The only solace that God made for him was us. And when he comes to us and can't get any sanctuary at all, then he don't have no life. And then they win, because what they want to do is to destroy him and make us think that we are better than him, so that we will help the enemy destroy our own man that God gave to us. We have the best man on earth. Everybody want him. He looked better than everybody. He's stronger than everybody. He is the best, the wisest, and the most beautiful. Now, of course, many of our men have been tricked by the enemy too. But since we are the mothers, we are the first face they see. We are the first person they talk to. We the first person to feed them. We do all of that and raise them up. And so if there's a silly man out here, he didn't grow up and be silly. He was silly as a little boy because his mother mismanaged him and didn't reparent him using the truth.
And let's just give that. And, you know, this is why we have so many situations and circumstances in our community. This is one of the reasons why so many brothers have to turn the other way. Meanwhile, you know, we deal with dilemmas like this.
Five other men, 87 children with 50 different women.
This stat reflects an inverse ratio, a disproportionate number of women having children with a small number of men. So what does that mean? It means a small pool of men are fathering multiple children across multiple households, and women are repeatedly choosing them.
Jay is here also, and we also have five other men. These men collectively have 87 children with 50 different women.
With 50 different women.
That is 137 people who are impacted by choices and decisions that you've made. No heat, no judgment.
And black women are repeatedly choosing them.
So what you're talking about is the fact that there was six men who were responsible for impregnating 50 women, and those 50 women had 87 offspring collectively. So, excuse me. So, what that speaks to is how invisible the rest of black men are in black society. That speaks to the invisibility of black men in black society. And I think one of the things we have to acknowledge is the fact that black men are invisible. And not only black men are invisible, black men really aren't loved in our community. And so I want y'all to check this out. Listen to this sister right here. All right, I'm going to keep the music playing. Hold on.
I did not realize how hated black men were by black women until I did my series, My Husband Was Raised by a Single Mom, and This Is What I've Learned. And then I did another video, Black Men in Therapy, and the comments from black women, wow, color me surprised. I kept receiving comments full of skepticism from men saying, are you really trying to give us grace? Are you really trying to understand us? And when I saw the women comment, I went, oh, wow, now it's starting to click. And it saddened me, but I now understand. And a lot of them brought up generalizations about black men creating broken homes and leaving more baby mamas and babies out there. But I feel like millennials and Gen Z are swinging the pendulum the other way from Xers and boomers, because they're trying to be in their children's lives. They're not trying to have these broken homes. They're trying to make it work with their partners. So now.
So, and first and foremost, and this woman is responding to a response where it says, definitely rare when a black woman takes time to hear black men, to hear and understand us. And that was from a brother. And let's be clear about something. First of all, she's off on a few things. You know, I'll give her credit where credit is due. You know, this young sister said they don't do any real research. It's not millennials and zennials that have broken the whole notion of active fathers. Black fathers are the most active fathers statistically. You know, you can go to what's that place out of Atlanta? Damn it. I hate when I get like brain freezes when I do this show. there are places that have already proved these stats to be inaccurate in regards to black men just leaving homes. And then you saw the previous clip. You heard with the previous clip with Yalyn Van Zandt, where, you know, black women are choosing the same small minority of men to have children with. And this is across the board. I mean, this phenomenon of black men having 20 and 30 children, this is insane. And, you know, it makes you wonder, like, what makes another woman want to be number 23 or 24? And what does that say about your self-esteem? That you want to get in line. And then you probably visually can see he can't be attentive to the other children. So what makes you think he's going to be attentive to your child? But nonetheless, black men are still active in the lives of their children. And you go to blackdemographics.com and black demographics, I believe it's blackdemographics.com or blackdemographics.org. And which is black statistics for black people by black people. And so they tabulate all the government statistics and the different surveys, and they're able to tell, you know, I think it was the Pell Grant or Pell Grant, people that do the Pell Grant, they did some studies and things of that nature. But the bottom line is the information's out there. The stats are out there on black men and involvement in children. But there's also the stats are also out there for the fact that the one thing she is got wrong but kind of right, but she didn't know it, is that the last several generations of black people are not producing children, period. When the women, the girls aren't getting pregnant, and the men, the males, they're not impregnating anybody. They're not even dating at this point, which speaks to another decline in terms of the black community and so forth. But you know, there's a lot of us, a lot of things we have to deal with. And, you know, these are simply the breaks, right? And so let's hear with on the Ask a Brother podcast. Let's hear what they had to say about this whole notion dealing with misandry.
There's black women that walk around that think that their hatred of black men doesn't count as anti-blackness. Their definition of anti-blackness is if it affects men that's in the LGBTQ and black women. If it's a hatred or misandry or wishing the worst thing possible, you want him to get accused of something, you want him to lose all his resources, it's fine because he's dating a white woman. You're comfortable with them dying, you're wishing the police take care of him, gender-based abortions. Why would I want to try to protect women or mourn or even try to fake mourning and grief for women that I know think like this? And the worst part is, it's not just the women who have the mindset. It's the women who don't have the mindset but are still cool with them, who still befriend them, who still hang out with them, who still act like this isn't what it is. The best way I can articulate why my view is, when I say specifically which type of black women are you talking about, this is the equivalent of y'all looking at me and being like, Jeff, I'd be cool with you, but you keep hanging out with these Klansmen. And I'm saying, ah, Klansmen, nah, they're not a bad deal. There's nothing wrong with them. And they're saying, Jeff, it's the Klansmen.
Black women do not care about black men, okay? Black women, unfortunately, sis, and I know y'all coming to beat me up, and I ain't talking about all of us, but I'm talking about the majority.
Here's what I hear in the back of my mind, so let me just go ahead and deal with it. Mm-hmm. Black women saying, well, look what they do, and look how they are, and look what they ging, and you know? And we unwittingly participate in the emasculation, the dehumanization, the devaluation, and the disheartening of black men because they didn't do it the way we wanted them to do it.
And I don't think it's unwittingly at this point. This is purposeful. A lot of this behavior is purposeful. You know, some people just want to see you in pain. And they don't care. They're emotionally at a place where they want to see you burn. And it's some things that can't be, you know, I mean, we got the evidence. We got the videos and the we got the audio clips. We got the articles, you know, meetings with Klansmen to plot and plan black men's demise. Talking about how black men are bullet bags, and they love to see black men being put in their place by the by white police officers and so forth. And black men humbled by, you know, when white police officers lynch black men. These conversations are happening out there. And it's amazing how a lot of people will hear me say this and they'll bypass all that and they'll go right into, you must hate black women. What am I to say when black women are actually out here saying the things that I'm saying, and they're telling the stories, they're telling from their perspectives as to why it's even happening? How does that make me a hater of black women for just putting it out there? I'm not understanding it. How does that make me a misogynist for simply putting out here? And I get it. We really can't even critique anything when it concerns, you know, the treatment of black men by black women. Everything that black men get from black women is deserved by a certain segment of our population. There's a reason behind it. I was just reading today, right? I was just reading today an article on Facebook where Dr. Tiasan Johnson was going into he had shared a story, and shout out to Dr. Tiasan Johnson for exposing a lot of the anti-black male hatred, right? I don't know what it is. As soon as you start scrolling, they start talking. Good Lord. So and looking for, and I'm looking for it right now, but there was a woman who actually tried to commit a murder-suicide of her 12-year-old son, right? And here's the story right here. So it said, a mother admits to shooting a 12-year-old son at point-blank range. Briasha Stroud, a 30-year-old mother from suburban Cincinnati, pleaded guilty to attempted murder on Tuesday, June 9th, 2026, for shooting her 12-year-old son at point-blank range. Stroud shot her son in the back of his head while sitting in a car parked inside a garage in Deer Park, Ohio. She then shot herself in the chest and overdosed on drugs. Stroud's boyfriend, who, my God, is a hero here. Nobody want to get praise for that. I'm going to give praise and credit for that brother. He discovered them and contacted the emergency services, reporting to dispatchers that he had seen that she had shot her son and was foaming at the mouth. And so the boy survived the shooting, but suffered catastrophic life-altering injuries. Can you imagine what that is? Catastrophic life-altering injuries. That means that that boy has suffered some brain injuries to the point now that he is going to be disabled and dysfunctional for the rest of his life. Reading this broke my heart. I wish I didn't even read this today. So it says Stroud remains in custody. Oh, he said the boy will never lead a normal life. Yeah, no shit. Stroud remains in custody at the Hamilton County Justice Center. Her sentencing hearing is scheduled for July 23rd, 2026, which is when she may face the possibility of spending decades behind bars. What the fuck you mean possibly? She already tried to end her life. She don't need to ever see the light of day. And in the comment section, right? In the comment section, there's so many people talking about, I wonder what happened. I wonder why. Let's read the comment section. Let's actually read the comment section from the original post. What drove the mother to this wall? Or to the wall? Fuck you mean? Who cares? And I'm really serious about that. It's amazing how if a black man had done this to his family, we would have called him a coward. We'd be calling him crazy. We'd be calling him deranged, wicked, all sorts of things, right? And there are some people that call it evil. And that's wicked, right? And in reply to that, you know what I'm saying? You have some people who agree with him. People agree. And that's, I believe it's a woman that said that. Thank God for that. Here's one. And I don't understand where this guy comes from. I don't even know if this is a real man, right? I wonder if a man was at fault for this. And then somebody had to reply to him, you know, well, the man saved them. In other words, the boyfriend is the one that came through and saved them. All right. So, you know, we have a bunch of comments here. And it said, what did it say? She didn't expect either one of them to live. Murder, suicide attempt. You know, it didn't work. It says something about not justifying this. She probably didn't want to leave her son to suffer without her. Now she made it 100 times worse. What does that even mean? You know how selfish you got to be to not just give the child up? Give that child to a loving family member. Give that child, go take that child somewhere. Anywhere is better than the predicament that that child had to suffer. All right? We just now, all of a sudden, it's like you want to handle this with rose petals and flowers. Instead of addressing, like people are trying to rationalize this. So, you know, and you always have like a group of feminists saying something to the effect of we need laws in place to protect women from men. Well, what laws should be in place to protect children from women? Because the majority of femicide, the majority of harm and abuse to children overwhelmingly comes from their mothers, from the women in their lives. Whether it's physical harm, whether it's killing them, whether it's sexual assault, it mostly comes from their mothers. And most people don't want to acknowledge that. The lack of protection, bringing predators into the position where they can reach those children, and then blaming the children. I used to do videos about children who, females, young ladies, who will argue with their mothers or confront their mothers about their mother's boyfriend slipping into their bedrooms. And the mothers would accuse their daughters of trying to steal their men. I had clips of this, videos of this. It's insane. And, you know, people would share it with me because they were afraid to share it on their own channels. So they would share it with me so that it wouldn't, so they wouldn't have to bear the brunt of sharing this information. But we, you know, we got more about this whole concept about, you know, love for brothers, right? I want y'all to hear Love Dorsey. Check this out. Hold on, I think they got some. You know, I hate when people. Well, I ain't gonna say I hate because people got a right to do what they do with their clips, but they always put music to it with throws a monkey wrench in it when I do it.
In our community, we are programmed to believe that women are operating from this righteous space because that's all you have. Like all you had was your mom. One of the biggest scams I realized in life is something that we do as women. It really is a scam. You parental alienate and you shut your child's life up to where they only have as the mama. I make it where because of my feelings towards the baby daddy, he can't come around. And if he can't come around me and I'm the custodial parent for y'all, he can't come around y'all. And then as I raise y'all, I continue to perpetuate this thought in you that I'm all you have. You see, that's how I'm the only one there. You see, it was your birthday. I was the only one that bought you stuff. You see how your mama been there. Your mama been there. Your mama been there. It's a fucking diabolical trick. It is a scam to make decisions and parental alienate and then program the child to believe that you are some sort of fucking martyr that saved them from the depths of hell or poverty or they deadbeat ass daddy when you actually created the dynamic for the father to not be able to show up. And then you have the people that say, can't no woman stop you from seeing your kids. Baby, women can 100% keep you from your motherfucking kids. And any of y'all that's raising young boys, you should make it clear to them, as a man, it is your responsibility to be diligent and to have standards and to put focus on what women you allow access to you, because guess what? We can't keep you from your kids. We can't lie on you and get you locked the fuck up and you have never actually had to do anything at all. We can manipulate and create situations where we can take you for everything you fucking got, everything you built and spent your whole life building over a lustful moment or over you making us upset or over us disagreeing. I know the power that we have as women and I'm honest about it. A lot of people are not. And it's for the same reasons that I'm saying. They've been tricked. Like, what is the point of still dealing with your parents when everything that you're learning about being a better person, of good character, building wealth and assets, healthy relationships, all of their characters and teachings and ways are the opposite of that? What would be the point besides the fact that, like black folks always say, that's your mama or that's your daddy? But oftentimes, these are the very people who brought you in this world. They are the ones that are creating the hell that you're living in. And it's not about blame. It's about realization. I ain't saying this so you can sit back and feel sorry for yourself or go point the finger at your parents. It's for you to wake the fuck up and stop believing any and everything that they're saying and look at the world for what the fuck it really is. We as women and mothers, we lie. A nigga make us mad, we will go a lifetime keeping you from your motherfucking kids because you lied and cheated on us back when we were together. We will do that. We will go into these family courts and we will lie. We will manipulate the system. If you go get a new girlfriend, we'll get mad about that. We'll make it seem like something happened to our kid that did not happen. Yes, we will do that. And we do it often. And it affects the mental health of the children, us, and the men. Hell, the shit we doing to be hurting our own selves. And as a community of women, we often do not hold each other accountable. We don't. And when y'all speak as men, we don't believe y'all. And nor do your fellow man neither, as a culture. The sooner we start to realize that, the quicker you will get to the point of, I'm looking for what's right. I'm looking for truth. I'm looking for what makes sense for growth. I'm looking for what will help me as I'm raising my children, create a better product. I'm looking for what character traits and what ways about myself are necessary for me to build relationships with healthy people. I'm looking for people with boundaries, people that will tell me no, because I want to be able to tell them no. I'm looking for men that you have to earn access to them. And I'm looking for women that they make decisions about their life and certain things that they're doing with themselves, with their body, with having kids, that make sense to what they want for their life, not for what they can use as a manipulation tool or a pawn in order to try to gain some sort of leverage.
Yeah, that's what an H-bomb sounds like. When you drop bombs like that, we have to give praise and credit to. All right, and that's Love Dorsey. And Love Dorsey has been on one for a minute, man, talking about the way that, you know, we failed as a society. Society has failed young black boys, right? Society has failed them. And it keeps going on and on. And it just gets, you know, it's despicable to a point, right? But here's another response too, right? I want y'all to listen to what Mace has to say. Mace off the It Is What It Is podcast. And, you know, Mace the rapper, if any of y'all know, Bad Boys, get that. You know what I mean? Take that. All right, check this out. Listen to this here.
And you're raised by your mom, you're a different man. You're a different boy. And you don't like hearing stuff from other men. Like, that's really one of the biggest issues I see in hip-hop and in sports. That you just have a bunch of guys that were raised by their mothers. So they never heard a man's take on what they're doing. So they can't hear it. And then we get upset, killer. You'd be like, but he'll listen to his girl. He'll listen to his girl because he was raised listening to a woman. He don't listen to men at all. You'll say he have a problem with authority. No, he just I have a problem with men. But if a woman tell him something, she can get him to bring his whole check to her. And it's crazy. So for all of you listening.
That's a really good point, man.
Yeah. This is just raised by their mothers. I had a stepfather. You had a grandfather. So you know when a guy say what he said, that's what it is. That's why we carry that. So all they know is tantrums. All they know is attitude and facial expressions. People walk by. You're like, why is he making his face like that? Because his mother used to do that. That's how his mother raised him. He's sassy.
Great point.
And see, that's something that we don't. We try to have these conversations, right? And I talk to groups of men all the time. And one of the things I notice is that it gets like that in those groups. And dudes, yo, I'm trying to tell you, in groups that are by men for men, designed to empower men, there are cats in those groups that's like, yo, man, somebody needs to speak for the women in this group. And I'm like, bro, this is not that group. You know what I'm saying? Yo, fam, this is not that group. You know, this is actually bringing balance to the force. Us being able to create a space for men. And, you know, I have to constantly reinforce that because we always get new guys that come to groups and things of that nature. And they think they're going to come in on some, you know, I got the plan. I got the answers to all this other stuff. And they haven't really, they haven't even grasped the concept of why the community is struggling or failing. And it's one of those things where they try to be He-Man and put everything on the shoulders of men when that's not how you're going to fix the community. You're not going to fix a community when men are broken and there's no places for them to heal. There's no places for them to get fixed. There's no places for them to rationalize why the world hates them. And they think it's a normalcy now that to be hated by everybody. To the point where they start to hate themselves. They grow up hating themselves. They've never loved themselves. You know, and teaching black men to love themselves is a hell of a journey, B. Because now you got, you know, it's to a place where that level of vulnerability that they're in, you know, they get real protective, and rightfully so. But it's a hard place to work from, you know, in regards to how we have to get down with a lot of this stuff, man. And you know, and this episode is titled The Breaks because I just wanted to be real with the brothers about the circumstances in the world we live in. Straight no chaser. So you can understand how when when these things come about, any circumstance you deal with in life, brothers, we need to understand that, hey, man, we're not in the place where the love is going to be in abundance. We're not in a place where people are going to just open up and you know, we've just gotten to the place where a minuscule number of black women have actually started to call out the BS and started to call out all the things taking place. That's why you have the Love Dorseys of the world. That's why you have Crimson Cures of the world. Because they're the actual ones calling it out now. And it's a shame. Like I said before, it's a shame. Because, you know, we're dealing with it. Look at what happened in the Carmelo Anthony case. Right? And I'm not here to talk either way about his guilt in terms of what happened. Right? It's acknowledged what happened. The fight, the knife. It's acknowledged what happened. But when you look at the over-censoring, the over-sentencing, 35 years, that means he won't get out of jail till he's in his 50s. I need people to understand that if he has to do all the time. In Texas, you do hard time. You don't get out of jail until you're like 50. Texas and Florida are probably the two worst places to get arrested. Texas, Florida, and California, probably the three worst places in the country to get arrested. I mean, hopefully they say he's about to file an appeal. Now, hopefully, through the appeal process, his sentence gets knocked down because you have other people in that state who did the exact same thing he did. White kids, Latino kids. And those kids have gotten, like, one kid got 30 days jail, 10 years probation. Another kid got 10 years, a 10-year sentence. The whole charge was changed. It wasn't even considered like a murder one case. And in those cases, those kids got less sentencing. But this is what I say. This is why I say at the end of every broadcast. Sorry. I told y'all my voice is a little raspy. This is why I say at the end of every broadcast that war is peace. And if you want peace, you better be willing to wage war for it. Because you have to be in the position to be in a place of power in a society to protect your people. You know, the advocacy, you know, that people are talking about in regards to this particular case, we want to be angry. We want to have rage for a moment. And then, you know, in a few days, nobody will be talking about this kid, unfortunately. This kid will be left to his family. And an occasional blip will come up in regards to his particular case as people reflect on it and things of that nature. But he's not going to be a front page story. No, you know, like this kid, the climax of his circumstances just happened. It's all downhill from here, unfortunately, for him. And, you know, no, and I'm not taking lightly the loss of life here. You know, life is precious. You know, I'm not taking lightly the loss of life. But when you get into a fight with somebody, there's a chance that somebody can go, you know, as they say, to the upper room. That's just the chances you take. And anytime you get into a violent altercation with you know, anybody that can be violent, and males, especially athletic males, can be extremely violent. They have the capacity to go past go in regards to, you know, violence. You know, it's actually part of their competitive nature to be violent. So, you know, I bring these things to a front and I talk about it. And you know, there's a story right now with a young brother who was killed, you know, by the Chinese grocer over there in North Carolina, I believe South Carolina. And I believe that they said this guy had a history in the community of being aggressive towards black patrons. And this isn't the first time he ran down somebody and chased them out of the store. So he got off on the case, by the way. And this is a situation and circumstance where, you know, black people, what are you doing? I mean, they ransacked this store, but, you know, that's an insurance claim. Why is somebody allowed to come into a place where you commune? This is your place of being, your neighborhood, right? Why does somebody get to, why do you allow anybody into your neighborhood? Now you want a national boycott. Here we go with the bullshit again. Don't even understand what a boycott really is. Boycotts are when you want to leverage your, you know, your whatever your you want to leverage your wealth, you want to leverage your resources against a certain entity to improve the outcomes for your particular people or your particular group. So that you can recommit to going back to doing business with these people. It's like going on strike. That's a real boycott, going on strike. Right? When workers go on strike, they want a better contract. That's boycotting. If you really want to do some work, you just abstain. And I understand many of you live in food deserts. And I also understand many of you don't care enough about black people to actually give a damn about the fact that this is something I might have to do. And I'm not even talking about a national boycott. I'm talking about that damn store. That store is where it happened at. Make a model out of what y'all do to that store. And I'm not just talking about ransacking it. Make it where It's uninhabitable. Nobody would consider thinking going there. Turn that place into a real desert. Nobody shops there anymore. But you know, they say ignorance is bliss. I say people are blissfully ignorant in how they're going to handle those situations. And this is one of the reasons why I got out of doing it. Because I was one of the main ringleaders in regards to structural change for the community. But I wasn't on this whole thing where people want a microwave solution. You want something to change overnight. I was never that gullible to think you can change an economy by boycotting something for one weekend. Boycott Black Friday for what? They just extended it. They put it online. And guess what? When nobody's looking, guess who's reaching into their digital wallets? Guess who? The same people talking about no justice, no peace. No Roger, no rerun, no rent. You know, the same ones. So we got to stop being, you know, we got to stop being responding like juveniles. Like, our Arrested Development shows in every circuit. And so somebody had mentioned, right, we were doing a podcast on it a few days ago. Shout out to, you know, like I say, my brother Joe Ward, Patrick Irvin, you know, Partners in Crime on the shows of Giants as we do our reactions. And somebody had reflected to my film, The Independence Day Project. They, you know, somebody had watched the film. And they pointed out to a point where I said, you know, we don't boycott, we abstain. And I said, there's an integral part to that, though. I said, you don't boycott in your community. You just build the things you need from your community. If your community needs a grocery store, then slowly but surely you invest and you build the sweat equity. You put the financial resources into your community. You get your politicians on board. They want your vote. We need this particular situation. Hold them to it. Many local politicians have to get reelected every 2 years. We don't see a brick laying down. We don't see the ground breaking. We don't see any ribbons being cut. Okay, you out. On with the next until they get the message. Because we damn sure don't have the patience to build our own politicians. That's what we should do. But you build it and you build it and you build it. And by the time you're ready, there's no need for a boycott. There's no need for protest. You just simply walk away from their stores and you go into yours. But then we also have to treat our stores with a little respect. We can't be in there giving each other the five-finger discount just because I know the cash register. You know, the cashier turns a blind eye to me slipping out with a whole shopping cart full of food. We can't operate like that. And then we can't do what we normally do is as soon as we have a minor incident, we turn anthills and molehills into mountains. When our disgust with a black business is a black entity. And then we create a boycott situation, an abstention or an abstaining situation in our own communities. It doesn't work like that. And this is when you have to actually have a code of conduct. And when you're on code with each other, you realize you're not stealing from everybody. You're stealing from yourself. Because, you know, there was a brother, he used to play on The Wire, right? And like I said, man, I don't know why, because when I re-listen to the podcast, I can say the name of the person. Like, damn, that's what I should have said. But during the process of the podcast, if I didn't write this shit down before, I'm not going to be able to just think of every name. You know, unfortunately, my memory doesn't quite work like that. I know who I'm talking about. I can see him. I can see him when I close my eyes, but I can't just get their name out there. So, but there's a brother who opened up a store in New Orleans, a supermarket, a black-owned supermarket in New Orleans. And the shit only opened for like a month and a half because, you know, too many people from the neighborhood were stealing from it. Like, what? Yo, we think it's real cool to do dirty shit to people who try to do good things. You know, and it's that person walking around with an attitude all day because you caught them about to steal something out your car. Like, to this day, I still see palm prints, greasy palm prints on a freshly cleaned car. You know, right on the windows, people looking in and see if I left anything in the car. You know what I'm saying? So you can't, it's certain things, and it's like, it's a shame to say that you can't really build a lot around niggas. And we don't like to say that. We don't like to hear that. But we do have a lot of niggas where we try to build shit. And niggas is everywhere. Don't think just for a second that when you say niggas, that it's just the scoundrels you see on the street. Savages you see on the street. No, there are niggas in corporate America, too, that play dirty. That do nigga shit in corporate America. Don't be fooled. It's just a different arena, so the nigga shit they do is different. But they, you know, they're grimy just like the niggas in the street. You can't trust them just like the niggas in the street. You know, you mess around and shit, don't, I ain't gonna get into a lot, but it's a whole notion around staying sucker free. And then staying sucker free, you have to ward off suckers. It's like you have to put, like, you have to wear crystals and shit and medallions and things of that nature to ward off certain evil in your life. It'll find you, trust and believe. And just, I promise you, it reminds me of that movie. I know I feel like I'm all over the place, but all this stuff is intertwined, y'all. I kind of freestyled it a little bit this time, but all this stuff is intertwined. You remember that movie with Denzel Washington, and he was in Philly, and it had the fallen angel whose goal was to bring down humanity, but it was born without form, so it had to move in between human beings by touching each other. You know what I'm saying? You know, in real life, you deal with shit like that where a spirit will come upon somebody, and that spirit will follow you around. So it'll get into people around you, and you start seeing similar things. Like, you're like, yo, I don't know you, but I know your energy. I know your spirit. I know a lot of y'all can relate to this right now. I know your energy. I know your spirit. And I tried to get away from you. You know, your likeness. I tried to get away from you, but you keep seemingly following me. You keep finding me. And so I say sometimes you got to stay prayed up because evil lurks. But it's also, you know, it's like a nigga gen energy. If I can put it out there. And that's, you know, that's some of the things that, it's one of some of the reasons why we can't build in our community. It's like the curse is following us in certain ways. And as black men, the curse is following you. And it follows you to a point where people who identify as black males, they're not necessarily black men. They call themselves black men, but they're really just black males. A lot of them have been here, and they have been put in a place to be your number one hater. They've been promoted to the number one, to the position of number one hater. So, you know, those are the people that when everything is going right in your world, it's like when things are about to get to a place where you're like, okay, bet, I've been working hard to get to this certain spot. Boom, here comes somebody with some bullshit. Every time you're about to get to a certain position in life, there's going to be somebody that pulls up with some bullshit that's going to create a setback. You got to be prepared for it. And I guess that's one of the things we talk about with the breaks. As black men, there's always going to be the ops out there. And as much as I hate using that language, it fits because the people you deal with on a day-to-day basis can be the ops. And we talk about it all the time. Like, people that want you to do good, but not too good. Then there's some people that just actually, they'll smile in your face. They'll offer you hand, like, pounds and handshakes and things of that nature, and smile on your face. But you know behind that smile is something wicked. And this why that's why, you know, I played the clip earlier with the brother, old girl. She's smiling while she's doing them dirty. I bet money that those kids ain't even his. We talked about the paternity situation. Oh, it was one I wanted to share with y'all about the paternity, right? I want y'all to check this out because there's something going on with the paternity issue. This would be the final clip of the program, but check this out.
I got this comment saying that in states where DNA testing became mandatory for child support, nearly half the men tested were not the father. I had to look into that. Here's what we actually know. Georgia passed a law in 2015 making DNA testing mandatory in all new child support cases where paternity had not been legally established. So an acknowledgement of paternity is a legal establishment. Their own data showed approximately 20% of men ordered to pay child support were not the biological father. Nationally, paternity testing labs report that between 28 and 32% of men who take paternity tests are not the father. In 2025, that number climbed to nearly 40%. Right now, Missouri is pushing it even further. Representative Tonya Rush introduced House Bill 3197, which would require mandatory DNA paternity testing at the time of birth for every child born in Missouri. No assumption, no guessing, confirmed from day one. The bill also includes a fund to cover the cost so no family is priced out. Men have been ordered to pay child support for children that DNA later proved was not theirs. And courts have still refused to remove that obligation. Georgia got it right. Missouri is fighting for it now. This should be the standard in every single state. If you agree, comment below and tell me what state you're in. Because this fight is a state-by-state basis, and we need mandatory DNA testing in every single state. Because no child should grow up without knowing who their father is, and no father should grow up not knowing whether or not a child is biologically his.
I hate that TikTok does that. TikTok marks all his damn videos. But that's an important part, right? You know, and I don't know why it's such a big issue. If the child belongs to who we say it belongs to, then damn it, why not certify with a paternity test? Right? Another game being played. You know, not knowing if you're the father and then being gaslit and shaming actions. You know, people hitting you up. You ask, is the child mine? They start.
Shame. 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 Shame.
So, we got to be clear about a lot of things, man. But the one thing I tell you, brothers, is stay solid, man. Keep your eyes on the prize. Stand on your square. Don't be cowards, man. You know, there's a lot of brothers, unfortunately, who suffer from fear and get locked into bad situations because they're scared to move forward. They're scared to address things. They allow things to fester. When you allow things to fester, sucker shit starts to build up. The sucker starts feeling real strong. You know, you have to alleviate the sucker of all his power or, you know, her power, whoever. But anyway, as I said, y'all, these are the breaks. Bright men, this is what we deal with. So what say you? So I'd like to thank all y'all for tuning in, pulling up to another edition of Office Hours with Professor Carl Tone Jones. I am Professor Carl Tone Jones, and as I always say, every single episode, war and peace, brothers. Because if you want peace, you better be willing to wage war for it. And with that, I am out of here.